Blog Talk Radio.
Holy cow, James Comey has been fired. James Comey, head of the FBI, has been fired. If you've been sleeping under a rock for the last 10 hours, 20 hours. And so what was he fired for? Officially, he was fired for screwing up the Clinton investigation. And I think unofficially, he was fired because he's a wild card and nobody can predict him. And he does stuff that was also he lied to Congress. And I think that's probably what Trump should have said. But if you'll follow the events that occurred, there was an investigation into Hillary Clinton and her emails. During that investigation, towards the end of it, Loretta Lynch met with Bill Clinton on the tarmac at the airport, in the plane, on the runway in Phoenix. Something that came out that was not an official meeting, and the meeting, as I believe, was almost an hour. And when it came out and they asked Bill Clinton about it, and Loretta Lynch, they said they talked about golf and grandkids. Fast forward, James Comey makes the announcement on the investigation of Hillary Clinton and says that there's no prosecutor anywhere who would take this case and go forward with it. There's not enough evidence. There's not enough evidence of wrongdoing. Then, right before the election, the email investigation is opened up again, and James Comey says, we found all these new emails on this private computer used by Huma Abedin, who was the number two person, the number two assistant, or number one, I should say, number one assistant to Hillary Clinton. And that was discovered as part of an investigation into child porn by her husband, Weiner, or perhaps not child porn, but it was in reference to him sending pictures, nude pictures, to an underage girl. However they characterized the Anthony Weiner investigation, which was also FBI. involved somehow. And then James Comey, well, Donald Trump won the election, and then he says he had faith in James Comey. All right, so about a week ago, James Comey got up in front of Congress and said, when they asked him about the investigation into Hillary and Huma Abedin and Anthony Weiner, he had stated that hundreds of thousands of emails had been forwarded to Huma Abedin's laptop or computer. The FBI itself then stated that they had to, were considering drafting a letter to clear up the misstatements by Comey. And apparently there were not hundreds of thousands of emails that were forwarded over to Anthony Weiner's laptop. All right, so I think when Trump got word of the fact that Comey had either made this big mistake or had lied, I think that was the final straw. So you've got to see all of these things in context. And the thing that I found most interesting was that James Comey had stated that the reason he felt like he needed to open up the email investigation from the FBI side to more transparency was because Loretta Lynch had met with Bill Clinton. And because of that meeting, he felt like the investigation was in a shambles, that no one would accept that it was an untainted investigation. So he had to get involved, which then led to him getting involved again, or opening up the investigation again publicly. So although everybody who was on the left said that it was no big deal that Bill Clinton met with Loretta Lynch, and they laughed at the idea that Bill Clinton had put any pressure on Loretta Lynch to not indict his wife or at least go after her for a misdemeanor or a felony. That was a big deal, and we know it was a big deal because James Comey reacted to that. And when he reacted to it, it became public and finally blew up, and it cost her, according to some people, the election. And that's the backdrop to James Comey getting fired yesterday. So I believe it was finally triggered by Comey is on the record as having lied when he had put his credibility on the line every time when he talked and he laughed at, you know, are you partisan? Are you political? He laughed and stuff. So he lied. Now, he could have been summing things up in his mind and been inarticulate description. Or for some other reason, he lied. It was either a mistake or a purposeful lie. Here is a little bit, though, from CBS on the firing of James Comey.
I want to remind you a little bit of the background here. James Comey, of course, during the election campaign, announced that the FBI was investigating whether Hillary Clinton had misused, if you will, classified information and put it on a non-classified email server that she was using for her email correspondence at the time. After a certain point before the election, Comey came out and said that there was no reason to charge Mrs. Clinton, that some of what she had done had been extremely careless, he said, but did not rise to the level of a criminal action. Then a few days before Election Day, Comey announced that new emails had been discovered and the FBI was reopening its investigation of Mrs. Clinton. Nothing came of that either, but former Secretary Clinton has blamed James Comey for costing her the election. There has been some controversy over the last couple of days about James Comey's testimony about the Clinton email situation. Nancy Cordes has been covering that for us on Capitol Hill. Comey testified, Nancy, recently before the Senate. Tell us what's happened today on that.
Right. He testified before the Senate Judiciary Committee 6 days ago, and this was really his first opportunity, Scott, to explain his rationale for coming out 11 days before the election and letting Congress know in a way that he was surely aware would soon be divulged to the public that his agents were reopening their investigation. He said that at the time when they discovered that there were hundreds and thousands, as he put it, of emails that Huma Abedin, Hillary Clinton's close aide, had forwarded to her husband, former Congressman Anthony Weiner, to print out, that he felt that he simply had no choice but to alert Congress as his agents went through those emails. He also said that a number of those emails contained classified information. Well, CBS News, other news outlets, quickly began to get word from sources who are close to this investigation that actually that was not the case, that Huma Abedin didn't forward hundreds and thousands of emails to her husband, but actually only sporadically forwarded emails to him, and that the bulk of these 49,000 or so emails that were on Anthony Weiner's computer actually were the result of an automatic backup of a BlackBerry device, and that none of the emails were marked classified when Abedin sent them to her husband. That has generated a great deal of confusion, as you can imagine, here on Capitol Hill, Scott. Senators from the right and the left trying to figure out exactly what the truth is and what is fiction. And it was very surprising coming from the FBI director for two reasons. First of all, as you pointed out, he is a longtime legal expert who typically chooses his words very carefully and clearly knew that he was going to be grilled on this topic by the Senate Judiciary Committee. This was key to his explanation for why he took the steps that he did to alert Congress about the reopening of this investigation. And so it was only a few hours after word began to get out more widely here on Capitol Hill that he had either misspoken or misled Congress that this announcement came from the White House. And in fact, only a short time ago, Congress got a letter from the FBI clarifying what it was that Director Comey meant to say in that hearing last week.
Well, Trump should have done is just said this guy either lied or he made a massive mistake. Either way, he's doing things that a lot of people in the country felt like were not just citizens, but people in high places felt were erratic and needed some sort of explanation. All right, we'll take a break here and come back and focus on this some more. Little Mozart for you. Kirkel 622 Mozart Clarinet Concerto, according to some people, the most beautiful piece of classical music. Of course, how could you really say anything like that? But we'll be right back. 617 AM, Las Cruces AM 1450, 523 1450, and 805-61802 text. I got the text machine with me, and we'll be right back. Here's a little bit more from Scott Pelley on CBS on the inaccurate testimony. I cannot understand why Comey would give radically inaccurate testimony unless it, I don't know. And, you know, it makes it seem like he didn't know what was going on in the investigation in detail or he didn't pay attention. But what would he gain by lying? I mean, I really don't get it. I mean, because everybody, both sides were already kind of infuriated with the guy. So he was a marked man if he screwed up. But here's CBS Evening news. All right, here's a little bit from CBS San Francisco first.
Looking for a way to correct the record, Director James Comey gave dramatic testimony last week about his decision to reopen the investigation into Hillary Clinton's emails. But Kenneth Craig reports the FBI is now saying there may have been some inaccuracies.
Testifying before a Senate panel last week, FBI Director James Comey spoke for the first time.
I just want to ask one thing. If this guy's the head of the FBI, who in the FBI had authority to correct him? I'm just curious.
About his decision to go public 11 days before the 2016 presidential election about its investigation into Hillary Clinton's emails.
Look, this is terrible. It makes me mildly nauseous to think that we might have had some impact on the election. But honestly, it wouldn't change the decision.
On October 28th, Comey notified Congress after agents found emails on a laptop Clinton's top aide, Huma Abedin, shared with her husband, disgraced Congressman Anthony Weiner.
Somehow, her emails are being forwarded to Anthony Weiner, including classified information by her assistant, Huma Abedin. And so they found thousands of new emails.
Now the FBI is acknowledging some inaccuracies in Comey's testimony, saying he misspoke about the number of emails.
Director Comey will be back here Thursday on Capitol Hill to testify again, and it's possible he could use that opportunity to clarify his statement.
Then again, maybe not. Here's a little bit from Scott Pelley.
Our chief congressional correspondent, Nancy Cordes, on Capitol Hill, where Comey testified just last week.
Mr. President, with all due respect, you are making a big mistake.
Democrats use terms like Nixonian to describe Comey's firing. They argue President Trump is trying to thwart the FBI's investigation into his inner circle's potential ties to Russia. Connecticut Senator Richard Blumenthal.
Now we need a special prosecutor who is independent of the president and the Department of Justice, who can conduct an investigation objectively, aggressively, impartially.
But South Carolina Republican Lindsey Graham said a fresh start will serve the FBI and the nation well. And Maine Republican Susan Collins said Democratic outrage is misplaced.
The president did not fire the entire FBI. He fired the director of the FBI. And any suggestion that this is somehow going to stop the FBI's investigation of the attempts by the Russians to influence the elections last fall is really patently absurd.
But there is a growing list of high-profile Republicans who are critical of the president's move, and one of them is Richard Burr of North Carolina. He is the chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee, which is overseeing the Russia investigation. He says he is troubled by the timing and reasoning of Director Comey's termination, and Scott, he says it confuses an already difficult investigation.
In other breaking news, we have live news here from KOBE studio with
Jack Nixon,
Jack
Kelly.
Nixon. And well, I went over and asked Jack if we were going to have a clip for local news, and he said no, but I can do one better for you. I can deliver it live. So good morning, Jack.
Good
How's
morning.
It going?
I'm doing
first
great,
time,
Kelly.
First time I've lured you into the studio here.
Well, I'm happy to be here, and sometimes the technology enables us to have these special moments, and this is one of them.
Hey, well, first of all, your gut reaction that Comey was fired, I mean, it's stunning, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. But, you know, it's apparently he made enemies on both sides of the aisle, and you got to have bridges or you can't.
You're an island. No man is an island, according to John Dunn. And on top, caught him in a bald-faced lie about the emails. And so I guess that gave Trump an opportunity.
Hard to believe someone in politics would lie, Kelly, but I guess it happened.
We got to do some more investigation into this.
Okay.
All right. So for local news, and by the way, it's good to have you. You were formerly working in another company, but it's good to have you here in your voice.
Thank you. I started actually here on KOBE 40 years ago.
Wow. A young guy like you.
Yeah. Well, time goes by.
How tall are you?
6'6".
How tall is James Comey?
That I don't know.
Could you take him 101?
I don't have any quickness left, but I doubt he does either today.
So you got a three?
I can probably post up on him.
Post up on him. Okay. Yeah. All right. All right. I'm going to see if I can arrange it. He's got some free time coming up.
No threes, though. No. I got to post up.
All right.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. Here's the news. Finger pointing and recrimination seem to be the theme of the day for the opening statement in the statements in the Tai Chan murder trial. Second time around for Chan, who's accused of murdering his former partner on the Santa Fe Sheriff's Department. The shooting took place 3 years ago at the Hotel Encanto. The jury was allowed to see the rooms in the area where Martin was gunned down. Chan shot him in the back, and the story he has for the jury is that it was done in self-defense. Several members from the Mayfield High School have attained national recognition for excellent performance in the 2017 National Spanish Examinations. The exams are comprised of six levels according to the student's command of language, level six being the most advanced. Their teacher, Estela Guerra, has been teaching Spanish here for nearly 13 years. Former Española High School coach Richard Martinez has agreed to resign from the school district and not teach for a year and surrender his coaching license under a settlement with the state public education department. Martinez, the longtime boys basketball coach, had led the school to two state titles, but was accused of abusing the power and success that he achieved. Martinez said he agreed to the settlement to bring the matter to a closure. And attorneys for Governor Susana Martinez have asked the High Court to uphold her authority to eliminate funding for higher education in the legislature itself. They said that the funding isn't permanent, but that it could come back in the special session. University presidents also weighed in on Friday, and that's a story that's going to continue for a while, I'm afraid, Kelly.
Sounds good. And weather, what should we expect?
I think it's going to be nicer today, from what I remember. And it's going to be, we're going to have partly cloudy skies around, temperatures around 70. That's going to warm up tomorrow, and the rest of the week's going to get hot. So, but cooler today, but we're going in the right direction.
All right. Well, you're more than welcome to come back.
Okay, buddy.
Thank you.
If the gremlins are still working, then I will be back. Okay.
Okay,
partner.
Okay, thanks a lot. Folks, we'll take a little break here now for some more of our supporters. And I want to remind you, by the way, that we've got some, I've got Arif coming in today from Thai India. He's sponsoring the show. Sam Kane is also, the law firm of Sam Kane is sponsoring the show. And remember one thing, in pain, call Kane. And he's on Amador. He's got the gigantic metal bull. Reminds some of you of ancient Palestine. 575-526-5263, and we're going to get him in here occasionally to talk about the law. And then we've got, of course, Ben Rawson, who sponsors the show, and Rawson's Builder Supply. So make sure that you support them as well. Take a break here. Is this the most beautiful piece of classical music ever? I would fall on the side of Rachmaninoff, but I'll play some of that for you tomorrow. But here's Mozart's Clarinet Concerto, which was also used in a movie called American Gigolo. Be right back. AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523-1450, and 805-6180 for your text. We'll be back. All right, so James Comey, I just talked to another member of the studio group, and I said, "What do you think about James Comey getting fired?" And they said, "Well, he spent 9 months trying as hard as he could to get fired, and he finally got his wish." So, you know, I don't think that they can spin this. Although, here's a little spin for you.
Yeah, I'm joined now. Elizabeth Warren of Mass.
Elizabeth Warren is like a Sunday school teacher who stole all of the money from the treasury and then went on a 5-year crack binge.
Reaction to the dismissal of James Comey.
Well, let's put it in a little context. Remember, Sally Yates was acting attorney general, and one of the things she told the Trump administration was that his inner circle advisor Flynn was compromised by the Russians. and she gets fired. Preet Bharara is the U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York. He's the one who has jurisdiction over any investigation into what happened at Trump Tower. And after Donald Trump originally embraced him and said he wanted to keep him on, Preet gets fired. And now it turns out that James Comey, who says he has an active and ongoing investigation, will not rule out investigating
Kelly.
Donald Trump directly.
Morning, Kelly.
And
it's
the connection with
it's
the
who?
Trump campaign
Bob.
And the Russians. And now James Comey.
Hold on, hold on a second.
You put those together, and it's pretty clear what's going on here. Donald Trump doesn't want anyone coming any place close to an active investigation into the relationship between the Russians, the Trump campaign, and Donald Trump himself.
Elizabeth Warren, crack addict and communist, former church teacher, Sunday school teacher. We do have, speaking of which, Bob, what's going on, Bob?
Good morning, good man. Kelly, I think you were talking about James Comey. And what I think a lot of people don't understand is when we vote, it automatically becomes public record. And when you find out how he voted over the past 4 years or whatever the presidential election, I think that's going to answer a lot of questions that these naysayers have to say. And it's really going to affect.
What did James Comey, who's running the FBI, vote on?
No. If he votes for somebody for president, we can come in and find out by buying a book, I think, and it'll tell you who he voted for. He didn't tell anybody who he voted for.
Bob, do you think that James Comey has mental health issues? What's going on?
I'm not a psychologist.
Well, you could play one on radio here.
I don't know. Did you say Mr. Nixon's there?
No, yeah, Jack Nixon just was here. Why?
Oh, he sounds like a wonderful person.
You should
very successful.
You should. He could be another friend for you.
Well, he could be another person who contributes in the political scene rather than just give the news all the time.
Well, that's true. All right, Bob. So, is there a point today?
The point is that I went to go vote last week. But I was out of the district, so I couldn't vote. But I told people who were going to vote, I told them that when they vote, I told them it was public record, and they just did not want to hear that. So I don't know what's going on with that, but, I mean, everybody does need to know that if you vote, we know who you voted for, whether you want us to know or not. That will tell a lot of the story right there.
Uh-huh. And, Bob, I do have a response to your report.
Yeah, I don't want you to sound good. I know you don't mean bad, but if you go to jail and hear how they say that, I know that you would become a federal attorney. You'd forget about being a talk show host.
All right, let me talk to my spiritual advisors about this. Thanks for the call.
Love you, man.
See you later. Bye bye. I think that the flushometer may have busted the I don't know, let's see here, and it could have affected the maybe the flush was too loud. Bob, as usual, you hit a royal flush. All right, so let me kind of recalibrate here. All right, so let me get some news of the day from Google News. President Trump fires FBI Director Comey. Fist fight at Southwest jet. There's going to be a lot of unrest on these planes. A new leader in South Korea. And all right, so they say, by the way, for you Patriot fans, that they're loading up for one last rodeo here. They don't know how long. They don't have any idea how long Tom Brady. He's playing at an unprecedented level. Not just playing as well as any quarterback in history. Did you know statistically last season Tom Brady had the best statistical season of any quarterback in history, which is extraordinary. But he's everything, you know, the wheels have to come off at some point. So here is a timeline, or breaking down the ouster of former FBI Chief Comey from Fox.
And Justice Jay Sekulow from Circa News, Sarah Carter, and from our sister network, the Fox Business Network, our friend Lou Dobbs. Jay, legal standpoint, let's just examine this from that point of view and that perspective.
Sure. Well, first, what happened here was that James Comey, who's had selective disclosure disease, had caught up with him. And that's because he himself put his job at risk. He's the one that, leading the FBI, failed to move on issues that were so clear. Why was there not an investigation that came to a conclusion, other than him acting as the attorney general, which was not his job, regarding the email servers? We go back to that. I go back even further than that, Sean. What about the fake investigation that the FBI engaged in with those IRS cases? I litigated those cases, and I had some of our clients participating in those that so-called FBI investigation. It was a put-up. And this is, you know, James Comey, and this is without disrespect to the FBI, because the FBI does do great work. But this director of the FBI should have been fired, has been fired, and asked for it himself. I've been saying it for a year. The problem here is he decided he was going to become the judge and jury in these matters, and that was not the role of the FBI director. I could give you the litany of cases that should have been investigated, everything from the unmasking to the disclosures to the leaks to the media to the Clinton email server issue, which we've talked about at length. But at the end of the day, this director of the FBI was not a leader. And what he did was politicize a branch of government, a portion of government that should not be. And look, he serves at the pleasure of the president. Yeah, he had a 10-year term. Guess what? That term ended today. And it was his own undoing. He had to go back to the Congress today to clarify again testimony he gave.
Oh,
he was
horrible.
An absent director, and that's his problem.
And we're not even talking about very important failures under his time, including the Sarnev brothers. They interviewed him at the FBI. They let him go. Then they were warned again by Russia. They still didn't do anything. We could talk about in the case of
Orlando,
possession of emails of Nidal Hassan before Fort Hood, saying he wanted to kill his fellow soldiers to protect the Taliban. Let me bring in Lou, and then we'll get Sarah in here. Lou.
Well, the issue here is that Comey had it wrong from the very beginning. It's all based on an investigation that took 11 months to actually just drop everything, as you pointed out. The conclusion was to not prosecute when every charge against Hillary Clinton was staring Americans who are not lawyers in the face. They know that she acted irresponsibly. She acted against the law.
Illegally.
And there were absolutely no consequences. It is disturbing that this recommendation that came out today, that the president fire the FBI director, does not leave clearly the pointer toward restarting the investigation of Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
Because I think that is the effect here. This whole judgment today on the part of the president was based on the deputy attorney general and the attorney general saying, based on his handling of the investigation of Hillary Clinton, he ought to be fired. That being the case, that questions the investigation, the consequences, and that should be reopened, in my opinion.
Sarah Carter, you've been breaking a lot of news about the issue.
All right, here's a little bit from Newt Gingrich on this.
It was very serious news night. Former Speaker of the House, Fox News contributor, Newt Gingrich. As Speaker, I'm trying to lay out the case here. James Comey, I think, earned this. I'd love your thoughts.
Well, look, I think the key fact is that the brand new Deputy Attorney General, who is a 30-year career professional in the Justice Department, who was President Barack Obama's U.S. Attorney for Maryland, who was just 2 weeks ago endorsed by the Senate 94-6. This is the person who wrote the letter, which is devastating, and said that it's clear that Comey cannot lead the FBI, that he has made such a significant series of mistakes that it has crippled the morale of the FBI. And in that letter, he goes through citing attorney general after attorney general after attorney general, all of them saying what Comey's done violates totally the FBI. So you're President Trump. You have the deputy attorney general, who everybody agrees is a nonpartisan, widely approved career professional, sends a letter to the attorney general and says, if we're going to rebuild the FBI, Comey has to go. The attorney general says, all right, I agree with you. He puts a cover letter on. It shows up on President Trump's desk. What I would say to the Democrats is, if the President of the United States gets a letter like that from a career professional who you just voted for, how could he do anything else except accept the letter and fire the director of the FBI? Because you'd be looking at this career professional and deciding that he didn't know what he was talking about. And that's why I think the Democrats and the elite media tonight have this very, very difficult job of trying to convince the rest of us that somehow magically this Barack Obama U.S. attorney, 30-year professional, somehow was turned by the Trump team and is now an agent of Donald Trump. I don't believe that. I think what he did, and he has people should read the actual letter. He cites attorney general after attorney general from both parties saying that this was exactly wrong and that Comey, in fact, violated the rules of the Justice Department, the principles of the FBI, and is not capable of rebuilding the FBI. Now, I think at that point, President Trump, frankly, had no choice.
Well, let me read from this letter because I think this is very important, and it's not a case that the media is focusing in on. I cannot defend the director's handling of the conclusion of the investigation of Secretary Clinton's emails. He admitted up until he said he's not doing anything that she violated laws. And he goes on to say, and I do not understand his refusal to accept the nearly universal judgment that he was mistaken. Almost everyone agrees the director made serious mistakes. It is one of the few issues that unites people of diverse perspective, which we saw the comments of some of the left from when they didn't like what Comey was doing. And then it goes on to say the director was wrong to usurp the attorney general's authority, announce his conclusion that the case should be closed without prosecution. It is not the function of the director to make such an announcement. At most, the director should have, completed the investigation, presented its findings to federal prosecutors. Now he defends his decision by asserting that he believed the attorney general at the time was in conflict. But the FBI director is never empowered to supplant federal prosecutors and assume command of the Justice Department. There is a well-established process for other officials to step in when a conflict requires the recusal of the attorney general. Powerful indictment against James Comey.
Look, and what everybody has to understand is that letter is not written by a Trump campaign person. It's not written particularly by a Trump supporter. It's written by a 30-year career professional, President Barack Obama's choice to be the U.S. attorney for Maryland, and a man who the U.S. Senate voted 94-6 just 2 weeks ago, saying this is a man of great integrity. And when you read the letter, and of course it goes on at great length, when you read the letter, you realize that Comey, who, by the way, as you know, in the last 2 weeks, we've had Hillary Clinton on television saying that Comey was a major reason she lost. And it's kind of weird. You'd think the Democrats would be saying, yeah, I always thought what he did was wrong. Now they're saying, oh, no, you shouldn't get rid of him, even though they were all for getting rid of him. Hillary Clinton, I suspect, thinks he should have been gone. But this also fits another pattern. If Donald Trump walks out in the morning and says the American flag is red, white, and blue, a significant number of the elite media will say, no, it's fuchsia. Don't you understand that it's fuchsia? Because they're not going to accept Donald Trump saying anything. And in this case, Trump was the executor of the judgment of the attorney general and the deputy attorney general, who decisively said to him, you must fire Comey. And I think it's important to put in context what Trump is doing here. It's not about the campaign. It's not about Trump's personal view. It's the commander-in-chief, President of the United States, getting a document from his attorney general that says we cannot rebuild the FBI as long as this guy's in charge.
All right. We'll take a brief segue here. And I'll come back and let's see here. Well, I've got the best of the Donald Trump firings coming up. 649 AM Las Cruces, AM 1450. 523-1450. 805-6180 to text. Here are the best firings from Donald Trump, including James Comey.
Is what over?
It's over. Don't you think it's over? I mean, not just these two guys, just everybody. They just don't seem to have
it. You are going to see great successes from the men.
Well, you know, I hope I'm going to really see great successes from you, Sam, but no longer with us. You're fired. I have no choice. You're fired. Hey, for 2 weeks, you've been on the edge. You know that. But now we have to go. You're fired, sir. All right, so you guys go up. Sam, you go down. And we'll see.
Sir, thanks, sir.
Thank you for your time.
Thanks, George.
Go ahead, sir.
Sam is history. How will the group deal with their heartbreak?
That's it. You failed.
I have to agree with Caroline in that... Carolyn, sorry. Carolyn.
What? Because he's exempt, right, Bradford?
Yes, Mr. Trump.
He's the only one in the room right now, not nervous. Is that right?
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. I think that I performed up to my abilities on this task. I'd be willing to waive my exemption.
Okay, I'm going to accept that.
I have no problem at
that
all.
That means you may lose.
Absolutely.
Are you willing to do that?
Absolutely.
I'm going to accept that.
That's fine.
Bradford, I think it's stupid what you said. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to accept it.
That's fine, Mr.
And you may get fired tonight.
That's fine.
Okay, good. You're all in the hunt. The problem is that Bradford made an impulsive decision, a stupid, impulsive, life-threatening decision that, frankly, if you were running a company and made that kind of a decision, you destroy that company instantaneously. Bradford, you're fired.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Go back up to the suite.
Thank you for your time, Mr. Trump.
Get that won't make that mistake again.
I gave up my exemption because I thought that it was the right thing to do.
Josh, I think you were a very, very ineffective leader. Your decision-making was absolutely terrible. James, you built a batting cage. You took up all this space. Mark, this is a sales task. You didn't sell a single thing. And again, in this boardroom, we've never had a team lose so badly. You're all fired. All four are fired. Go home. Go home.
Sorry, we disappointed you. I'm better than
that. All right. I know you are. You're all better than that.
It was the worst defeat we have ever seen.
These are going season by season, by the way.
Eric, let me ask you a question. When we talk leadership, why didn't you step up and give something away? Don't you know customers like a freebie? You had a budget at that point. Give them something to eat, something to drink, something that they would do.
We had the gift bags.
What was in the gift bags?
There was nothing in the gift bag.
Good. So you gave a gift bag with nothing in it.
Without gift. That's right.
That's going to be a big hit with all the customers.
It was a complimentary giveaway. I don't think that was a bad decision.
What, giving away nothing? You know, Karen, these people are laughing at you. I mean, I'm sorry.
You know what? Let me just say something really quick.
Why should you interrupt me when I'm knocking
because
by interrupting me when I'm knocking him, what are you doing to yourself?
Because I'm being truthful, and I'll always be truthful.
How stupid is that, right?
It's not stupid.
Here I am. I'm getting ready to almost fire this guy for being a horrible leader. And you interrupt me, and you were no great shakes yourself. You did a lousy job. Here I am, I'm getting ready practically to fire this guy, and you keep interrupting me and stopping me from doing it. And in the end, what Carolyn said to you is true.
I want him to be fired.
She said, what have you done? And you couldn't answer it. You know what, Summer? You're fired.
Okay.
Go. Thank you. You didn't make it by much. I want to tell you that, Derek. She saved your ass.
Understood.
With her own stupidity, she saved your ass.
Not for long.
So who did James Comey save by getting fired? Well, let me ask you, was it justified? Was James Comey getting fired justified? And who's going to take his place? I've heard some names kicked around. I mentioned to Pete last night, Trey Gowdy, and he's from the same state, and he laughed his head off, and he said that guy he's a total freak. Still lives with his mother. I don't know anything about that. But I also heard on the news Rudy Giuliani, and then somebody else comes along and says, it's got to be someone that both sides can say is totally non-political. So 659, Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 805-6180. And we're going to come back and dig in a little bit more on AM Las Cruces. All right, so a summary of the day's news, and the top of the news is James Comey fired the claim by from the left is that it was a coup because of the Russian investigation, and yet James Comey was just found to have made such a gross misstatement of fact that the FBI itself believed it had to go and offer a letter of clarification from the FBI to the Congress. And so that just happened about a week ago. And obviously for James Comey to have taken a lot of power and authority into his own hands, which it's claimed was beyond his authority, that he had talked for the Department of Justice, when Loretta Lynch, who was very much a party person, very smug and a very, very self-righteous person, had said that there was nothing that happened in her hour-long talk between her and President Clinton, former President Clinton, but that she would go ahead and recuse herself. That made an opening. Comey said that it was that same meeting that caused him to want to be more transparent. But he's given his critics a golden opportunity to go after him. I mean, I don't know how else you can put it. And so when he got caught lying this last time, Trump, in the name of Hillary Clinton's investigation, and what he claimed was a botched investigation in terms of how he used the media, was used as a reason to fire him. But it you know, there could have been 10 different reasons. You can't say that he was a person who didn't screw up. So then the question is, did the firing come at the right time? And the left is going to claim it's a coup. And you heard Elizabeth Warren, who's really a nutcase, in my opinion, getting up and talking about this stuff and claiming that it was poorly motivated. Now, looking at, let me go through your headlines some more. Obama uses private jet, 14-car convoy to get to climate speech, was paid $3 million, and is being paid to promote global warming. And a woman claims to be that she was forced to pee in a cup on a United flight. That must have been interesting. Far fewer refugees entering the United States despite travel ban setbacks. The overall illegal immigrant surge has gone way down, I believe 70% down. A man who filmed a dispute on United, his ticket was canceled. Violent fistfight aboard a Southwest jet. Johnny Depp is missing millions of dollars. Johnny Depp, you know, spends $1 million a month, something like that. He's worth a couple hundred million dollars, and he is just probably the worst case of a celebrity just losing touch with reality and just going on a wild spending spree. It's incredible. Pardon me. I just looked it up. $2 million a month he spends. He's worth $400 million. That's absolutely crazy. All right, so other news. Looking for big stories that you would want to hear about. Grand jury, CNN grand jury subpoenas issued in FBI's Russia investigation. USA to boost surveillance for Russian exercise. Little Kim plans a sixth nuclear test. He's the only one this century that's tested any nuclear weapons. 42% of Americans won't date someone with bad credit. That's interesting. And looking for anything else here. Hungry Bear, this is a big story yesterday. Hungry Bear attempts to get into a lady's house for brownies. He smelled brownies cooking. He got up on the rail and got against the window. He's standing on his hind feet. He's against the sliding glass door, and he's basically pounding on the glass trying to get in there. And he opened the screen, and the woman in there screamed and ran outside and ran to the neighbor's house. Mexico's second deadliest country, worse than Afghanistan and Iraq. Isn't that incredible? Cheerleader jailed after lying about stolen uniform, and this is in El Paso. Yeah, I'll get you a little more on that in a moment. Obama and Clapper misled public about extent of NSA unmaskings. And let's see here. Well, I got a clip for you on this thing right here on the cheerleader. The cheerleader who lied so she could keep her uniform. Kind of sad, huh? And hold on a second here. Get a little problem opening this page. Let's hold on a second. Let's okay, here we go. All right. Well, let me get back to the story. in just a second. In the meantime, here is a version of the song we just listened to, Mozart's, in from the movie American Gigolo. We got a call too. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
This is Shane Jennings.
Shane, what's going on?
Hey, I wanted to talk a little bit about Comey.
Yeah, what's your opinion?
Oh, my opinion, it was long overdue. They should have done this a long time ago.
And what crimes did he commit that he should be fired for?
Well, perjury, I think, would be the least of the crimes. Besides perjury, conspiracy, aiding and abetting, and maybe destruction of evidence, tampering with evidence. I think it's a long list. If you got out the federal rules of criminal procedure and looked at the federal criminal laws on the books, it's probably tens of, or maybe more than that, that he's laws that he's broken.
Do you have any idea why, your opinion, he would get up and lie about how the how many emails there were and why would he lie about that? That's crazy.
Well, it was either political benefit. I mean, there's only so many motivations for this. Either he had to lie about it too, because he's tied to the email scandal some way. Maybe some of the agents knew that this was ongoing and they wanted to report it. He didn't want to, so he's trying to cover it up. Maybe the motivation was political. There could be several types of different motivations, but I would say it's mostly political. I think that his relationships with the Clintons went back all the way to the first political scandals of that the Clintons were involved in.
Okay. All right, Shane, thanks for the call. Good call. All right, folks, we'll take a break here, and we'll be right back. 7:15, we've got Arif from Thai India coming in, and we're going to do a new segment for the show once a week, Business Q&A. He owns Thai India, but he also is a business consultant. So if you have any questions or statements, we'll be right back. And a movie with a questionable premise, but a fantastic soundtrack, American Gigolo, with Richard Gere at the height of his charms, I guess. I had talked about kind of trying to cover the sexual revolution. I haven't really pulled it off very well so far, but it was sparked by this article I read by this girl named Rachel Moran, who had been a prostitute for 7 years. And she, like a lot of other prostitutes, a lot of prostitute stories start off with a girl running away from home because she's being abused, being a teenager, not having any way to support herself, getting into prostitution and stuff. But she had said that during the entire time she was a prostitute, there were only two times that it was remotely, and this is speaking of Richard Gere, this is based on another highly improbable movie theme, the movie that he did about the prostitute Pretty Woman, and he's a rich guy and they fall in love. This girl had said that basically her entire career as a prostitute, there was nothing enjoyable about it, because getting paid for sex by definition means that you're being used as an object and you're not going to enjoy it. So I thought that that was kind of interesting. And then I thought if that applied to prostitution, it must apply to porn. And we are kind of a completely immersed in porn culture. So, I mean, there's this myth or this thing out there that was kind of being used to, you know, the sexual revolution was sold on the idea that you can have something for nothing, or you can have your cake and eat it too. And I thought, you know, we're so caught up in it, and it's such a lie. And none of these porn stars really talk about how terrible these experiences are. But in any event, I mean, there's no difference between porn and prostitution, except one is filmed. But now here's on STDs at an all-time high. And this is from the doctors on YouTube.
The alarm stating that STDs like chlamydia, syphilis, and gonorrhea are at all-time record highs. And Dr. Nita, I want to start with you because you're an OBGYN, and obviously you're counseling a lot of people on this. What can people and parents do to make sure that they don't become one of these statistics, so to speak?
We just have to make sure that we are comfortable having uncomfortable conversations about sex. And especially in the case of teens, parents and guardians love them more than anybody in the world. So they just have to make sure they're protecting them through education. Like, for example, if a teenager comes to my clinic, a lot of times I will specifically say, are you sexually active? And they'll say no. And then I'll say, do you have oral sex? And they'll say, oh, yeah, I do that. So sometimes teenagers don't understand that oral sex can actually lead to gonorrhea, chlamydia, syphilis, herpes, human papillomavirus that can be associated with throat cancer. And very rarely, it can also lead to HIV. So we just need to make sure they're educated about those things.
As an emergency medicine doctor, you often see sexually transmitted infections presenting and people don't know what's going on. And it can be a very frightening experience. And quite frankly, even in my own life, seeing that, you're like, okay, I do not understand why people don't protect themselves more, because you do not want to deal with these. You can see some of these pictures we're scrolling here of what these infections may look like, so you know what to look out for.
I have had a lot of women newly divorced in their 40s and 50s.
And 60s.
And 60s. You know, we look at the rates of HIV in assisted living homes.
Yep.
People who think, oh, I'm not at risk. I'm not in my 20s anymore. I'm a divorced wife, and I'm going on a dating site looking, and I'm probably not at high risk. These aren't high-risk people. So I probably am going to be fine if I just do this one or two times. And then all of a sudden, they're coming to me saying, guess what I just got diagnosed with? I'm devastated. I have something that can't be cured.
Are we at a point where we insist that if you're going to start a relationship and be sexually intimate, and particularly in a scenario where you're going to have a monogamous, not use protection relationship, where we have to say, look, I want to see your lab results?
Yes, absolutely.
I
mean,
I want to put your name on it.
Some people do that.
Yes, go to the clinic together and then realize that if you are exposed a few weeks ago, then the test may not be positive yet. So I would say be in a monogamous relationship for at least 6 months and then get tested, as long as both of you have been monogamous for 6 months. And then
how about get married? Do you know what the rate of divorce is for two people that have never had sex with anybody else? I had to spend a lot of time researching this stuff. But I finally found a study on it, and they said that the rate of divorce was around 2-3% for two people that had never had sex with anybody else, which tells you something, that the sexual experience is explosive and obviously very emotional and can be highly detrimental to people's futures. But we are living in a society where we regularly encouraged to do whatever you feel like, despite the outcome. And it has been an absolute disaster for the society. Number one driver of poverty is single parent, single mother households. And you've got this continuing fixation on sex and porn. sex has become totally de-emotionalized. There's no intimacy. And so we've lost one of the main reasons for being alive, which is having an intact family and then having a relationship with our family and having a marriage in which there's intimacy. And this has come out of such movements as feminism, which is one, but another one is Marxism. And then another one is the, I guess you would say, desacralization, the loss of a religious sentiment in the world that we live in. But I would say, you look at the difference between where we are now and 50 years ago, I think that life was a lot more pleasurable in terms of your relationships with other people. There were not so many broken families and latchkey kids and multiple marriages. And all right, I've got the story for you. Cheerleader accused of lying on uniform theft. A Riverside High School cheerleader in El Paso arrested after allegedly claiming that a burglar had stolen her cheerleader uniform from her home. They did an investigation. Gina Nicole Torrijos, trying to hang on to the past, 18 years old, arrested on a charge of making a false police report after allegedly claiming that her cheerleader uniforms had been stolen during a home burglary April 15th. And her boyfriend was involved in the lie. And then one of her uniforms was returned that they had claimed was stolen. So anyway, let me take a little break here, and we're going to get some Jack Nixon in here for this break on the local news. AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523-1450, 805-6180. Kelly O'Connell Show. And I've got Arif Khan here, but I also have a phone call. Thanks for the call. The Kelly O'Connor Show's this.
It's Chuck.
Chuck, what's up? What's on your mind?
Well, I'd just like to kind of step back into state and local matters briefly.
Sure, go ahead.
During the break on the news, it said that the Mesilla, I guess, I'm not sure if it's board of directors or city council, voted on a statement on opposing any changes in the Oregon Mountain Monument. And we seem to go through this a lot in this state. State, local elected officials can pass all kinds of things regarding national and even international matters, but we drive on potholes, businesses fail, the states and all kind state and local governments are in all kinds of problems, but they can't take care of business. They can stick their noses into things regarding immigration, national security, national monuments, but they can't do what they're elected to do.
Yeah, that's for sure. That's a great way to put it. I was so entertained when the city council. Chuck, you're breathing into the phone in a kind of a loud way.
Actually, I kind of stepped out into a breeze. Sorry.
Oh, it's all right. I'm trying to regain my train of thought here. The vote by the city council against the wall, I thought who was the guy that tilted at windmills? Don Quixote. It was quixotic. It was this, like you say, you can't even have a local economy here, but we're willing to vote on measures that we really think that somebody, you know, Greg Smith must think that Donald Trump stopped the government to read the vote by the Las Cruces City Council and sat there for half of an hour with his mouth open. I mean, I think these guys are living in a fool's paradise, and I see them walking around. They're so impressed with themselves. The mayor couldn't be more smug, you know. It's absolutely crazy what these, like you say, the mindset of these people as the society falls apart around them and the economy skids to a halt. These guys think that they're running the world.
One big part of our problem here is that a lot of these people are elected in small off-year elections. So as long as they have the turnout, personal supporters, they're gonna be reelected, and they think that makes them very, very special. Really, they're just getting away with a very small percentage of the population, because unfortunately a lot of people have to go to work for a living and they may not make the polls for those very small elections.
There needs to be city council and a county commission meetings that occur after hours so the average person can go to it. And we need to get a better class of politicians to run. I mean, you know, to go in and get elected the mayor of the city and then think that you're going to end up on the, Mount Rushmore is very sad.
Well, I think getting better people to run is a question. We've had some good people in the past here and there, but because the turnout was so low, the few faithful of the incumbents were able to keep that person in power.
Yeah, that's true. Good. I'm sorry, Chuck, I got to go, but thanks. Good call. All right, folks, what we need here is leadership. We need people that are willing to run and be servant leaders. And that's actually what we had talked about before with Arif Khan, who's here today. And good morning, Arif.
Good morning.
How's it going?
It's great. How are you?
Now, all right, so we were going to do a question and answer for anybody who has, you know, business questions or in your consulting firm. What did you specialize in your consulting?
Well, leadership. That's what we've been talking about,
yeah.
Leadership. And one of the things that I wanted to point out, the gentleman that called, we don't need politicians. What we need is a statesman. And what we used to have, people who were genuinely interested in the welfare of their constituents and their servants. And that's what we need. We don't need politicians. Politicians are basically, you were talking about prostitutes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what they are.
Yeah.
And so, but leadership is what I specialize in. Leadership is my focus because everything rises and falls on leadership.
So how do you define leadership? Just kind of a offhand definition.
Well, the best example that I have in my mind is Jesus, even though I'm not a Christian, but that's truly leadership. Leadership is about serving people, providing them environments and opportunities to succeed, and finding where they excel and allowing them to be put in those positions so that they can excel.
Well, you and I were hanging out yesterday, and you had said that a true leader trains his successors. He trains other leaders.
Yes. The leadership is not, most people think that great leaders have great lots of followers. But in reality, leadership is about creating other leaders to follow you. The other leaders, and the only way that you can have a leadership is to have surround yourself with other leaders who are almost always are better than you are in order for you to grow. And that's the thing that, you know, most leaders do not recognize or understand, that having quality people around you does not diminish you. It just makes you better.
Yeah.
And that's what we focus on. We focus on creating an environment where if it is a business or organization or anything else, that you can create those leadership opportunities for other people to rise to the occasion and be part of your organization.
When you said Jesus, he trained 12 followers.
Yes.
And spent a lot of time with, he spent all of his time with his mm-hmm. apostles. So that's a good point. How does leadership affect a business? Because most people don't think of a business as a leadership undertaking.
If they don't, then the results are absolutely dismal. They fail. I mean, you can look at all the businesses that have failed and you can strictly point out to the person who was at the head of the table. And I was listening to John Maxwell one time, and he was talking about one of his mentors who purchases and turnaround businesses. And okay. One of the things that he said is that as soon as we purchase a business, the first thing we do is fire the CEO. And John Maxwell was appalled, and he goes, what do you mean fire the CEO? You don't talk to them? You don't discuss the possibility that they can grow the business? He says, if that was the case, the business would have grown already. We wouldn't be in this situation. Everything in business, in any organization, is dependent on how good a leadership you have. And I can, you know, you can argue with me all day long, but the reality is that that's where it is.
And I wonder what percentage of businesses lack leadership.
Well, a lot. We can look at our economy, look at our business failure rate, look at our where we are going, and you see that that's where it is lacking.
Well, what about the if you get, take took these same people, these same businesses, and put them in Tucson or in Dallas or in Houston, and it seems like the chances of them succeeding would be a lot higher.
Well, again, we're going back to what I talked about. Leadership requires you to provide an environment for those people, for those leaders to grow. If a city or an organization or anything else has a bad leader in our situation, if we have bad leaders at the head of the city where it doesn't provide the economic opportunities for these leaders to grow, yes, they're not going to succeed. If you put good people in bad systems, they will fail. If you put mediocre people in good systems, the chances are that they will succeed.
Okay, we'll take a little break here. We're here with Arif Khan at Thai India. And, well, I had some Taco Tuesday in here. What was in those?
There was, you had two types. There's the Thai tacos, Thai chicken tacos that we made yesterday, and then Indian tacos.
Very tasty. Delicious.
Thank you.
All right, we'll be right back, folks. 742 AM, Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523 1450, and 805-61802 text. Got some weather for you. Hey, it's Kelly.
Yeah, Kelly.
Yeah, who's this?
This is Bo.
Bo, what's up?
Nothing. I was trying to call and check that number you guys gave out.
Which number?
For the radio station.
You got it. You called in on the number.
Wow. I really didn't think that was correct. Am I on the air?
No, well, no, we're on an ad right now, but do you want to go on the air?
Oh, God. One day, yeah, I listen to you guys every morning, so I'd like to call in and get there.
Well, you're on the line that you would talk over the air. We just happen to be on an ad.
Oh, cool.
So you don't want to
well,
say?
Well, yeah, I don't have anything to say today. I just kind of wanted to
test it.
Be prepared for the next time.
All right. Okay, thanks for the call, Bo. Thank you.
Thanks. All right, bye-bye. Bye.
Bizarre.
Storm Adrian forms eastern Pacific off to a record start. It is right underneath Guatemala and is headed towards Mexico City.
Well, we're here with Arif Khan. Now, I just wanted to point out to you that there's a record early creation of a storm, a tropical storm. It's called Adrian, and it is right now underneath Guatemala, and it's headed towards Mexico City, and it looks to me like it's going to be up into Mexico through Saturday. I guess we could possibly get an impact from that, but it would probably be next week, I would think. But all right. So leadership in a business. So give me a well-led business that would be a role model.
Well, we talked about that yesterday. GE, when
Jack Welch
was in charge,
yeah,
was is very well led. A lot of people didn't like his approaches and his ideas. But you can say whatever, the facts are facts. GE grew under his leadership and grew tremendously.
Uh-huh.
And he believed in that same principle that you put people in the right position so that they can succeed. And leader's job is to find that and define, understand what each individual under his leadership is capable of and place them in those positions so that they can, that is said, good people, successful people find where their sweet spot is. Good leaders find where the sweet spots of all their followers is, or all their leaders are. That's the job of a good leader, to find and define where would you be successful. If I put you in a position where you're not well suited for, the chances of your success are very minimal. But if I find that and I can find a place where you can succeed and encourage you and give you all the tools that you need, then you will succeed.
All right. So they say it's harder to find good workers in the millennials.
Well, I don't believe that. We have to understand where this generation came from. We created this generation, giving them this false idea that there is no such thing as failure. Failure is despised in millennials. They don't believe in failure because it was never given to them. The opportunity was never given them to fail. And we never encouraged failure, because failure is not a bad thing. Failure is a learning mechanism. Mm-hmm. The only way you can learn is by failing. And if you're never given an opportunity to fail, then the chances of your success are very, very minimal. So they think that they were the greatest thing that ever existed on this earth.
The greatest generation was the millennials.
Right. Well, that's what their thought process is. But reality is different. So they come to the workplace and they finally realize, hey, wait a minute. I actually have to perform.
Yeah. So what do you do when you run into an employee with an entitled attitude? You owe me.
There is nothing to do except to educate, re-educate, and if they're willing to face the facts, then you have to understand where they're coming from and recognize, find ways to make them understand that what they believe and what reality is are two different things. And do it in such a way that they are not completely turned off. They're not completely given. There's ways to inspire. For instance, they seek recognition. They seek recognition.
So make little awards for...
Not necessarily awards, but just the recognizing that their efforts and giving them opportunity. They need...
Yeah, okay, we got a call. Thanks for the... Sorry about that. If you were calling in, call back. But you need to give special little awards to, like, little gold stars to the millennials?
Not gold stars. Just recognize their effort. Giving them tools to succeed. Giving them opportunities to make contribution. And when they make that contribution, give them feedback that they're on the right path. Not necessarily award them. You still have to recognize the failures. And you still have to...
Yeah, we've got a phone call. Thanks for the... If you're calling in, don't hang up within the first 3 seconds. All right, so maybe it's a millennial who's trying to work up the courage to defend the rest of the millennials. But there is no doubt. Yeah, I just want to say this about millennial, or not, but not really a millennials. The entitled attitude. You run into a ton of entitled attitudes out there, and I do not think you can be a happy person if you're entitled, because people will never give you enough.
No, you cannot. Now, that's not just the millennial problem. That's a problem in the United States. You know, we have created this society that believes that somehow they are owed everything. And it is not, you know, I am not totally against a welfare system, because it is the greatest that we have. And we want to make sure that when people do need genuine help, that we're there for them. But we don't want to create a society that is entitled, that, you know, creates this whole generation of
people.
We've
already got an entitled society. It's too late. We got another phone caller, the same phone call. Hello, this is Kelly.
Yes, sir, Kelly. May I please apologize to Mr. Khan?
What did you do now, Bob?
Well, last time I talked with you with him on the radio, I got pretty heated about him not being a employee for Walmart. And then he came back and said that he was a vendor. And I just want to apologize. I didn't mean to be so hostile. But there is something, a good point I'd like to bring up to you all. And what that is that, you know, the cost factor for good leadership, if you're going to be a good leader, it's going to cost you money.
That's,
in fact, you're going to lose money. Okay, so he hasn't brought that up.
Hold on, hold on. Hold on. First, we have to salute your apology. All right, so Bob.
I'm going to get you, Kelly. I'm going to get you.
So Arif, Bob is saying there's a cost to being a good leader. What's your response?
There's a cost to being not a very good leader. There's a worse cost.
You hear that, Bob? It's more costly to not be a good leader.
Yes, there is a cost associated with everything that you do, but the consequences of not good leadership is worse than not being a good leader. Yes, of course, it's going to cost. It's going to cost you training. It's going to cost you time. It costs. So I have a program at Thai India for servers that I take about 8 weeks before they are put on the floor, and those 8 weeks of training pays off in the long run.
Do you test them in the 40-yard dash? Is that one of the...
No, I don't.
Bob, hey, Bob, thanks for the call. All right, we got to take a break here. If you want to be a server, make sure you got a little sprinting skills. 752 Kelly Connolly, I'm Les Cruces, AM 1450. We're here with Arif Akhan at Thai India. We'll be right back. Business advice, if you have a question, call in. We do have a phone call. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
I'm sorry. I won't call anymore this week. Kelly, I think the man's going to file for bankruptcy, and I do not call that leadership. He may have good food, but I don't think that he's going to make it. He's going to file for bankruptcy. I'm assuming.
Thank you, Bob. I mean, I guess you want to address that.
Well, there's nothing to say about that. You know, yes, people have their different opinions and they think that this is the way to do that. But how do I address that? Really, there's nothing to say about that. I don't even want to go there because...
You're not planning on filing for bankruptcy.
Ignorance is bliss.
Yes. Okay, so the leadership that is... Where can a, if a person has already got a business, if they're already a manager, owner, what's a good way that they could be trained to become a better leader?
It's a mindset. First of all, you have to decide that you want to do that. And then you have to take, it is not a short-term process. It's a long, lifelong process. We can't have, we have this mindset of some microwave economy, microwave mentality that we think when we put something in the microwave and pop, you know, 30 seconds later, I'll pop, say, Hot Pocket, and we can have that. And that's what we think of leadership. We go to this weekly seminar or a weekend seminar. We put average manager in for a weekly seminar, and then the Monday morning they become a leader. That's not how it works. Leadership is action. Leadership is work. Leadership is constant development and understanding. And before you can even start the process, you have to have that mindset that you do want to be a leader and commit to that leadership process and then go on, because you cannot expect a immediate results. You know, there is no such thing in leadership. It is a lifelong process.
Uh-huh.
And you have to have that mindset. And that's the first thing that we discuss. We talk about a commitment on your own education, on your development, and understanding the process and going through the time and energy it will take and the cost, as you point out, to get there. There's just no way around it.
Right. Okay. So, and what do you look for when you hire somebody?
The thing I look for is, depending on what kind of position I'm hiring for, I look for passion. I look for understanding. I look for desire to be successful.
Desire is important. Yeah. So
absolutely. I mean, if you're not interested in being successful. And if your bottom line, as the gentleman pointed out earlier, is only money, then you will fail absolutely 100%.
Right.
If you're a bottom line focused individual, you're not going to make it.
All right. So where's the restaurant?
Restaurant is 1445 West Picacho Avenue.
And what, name one dish that if you were going there, you'd order for sure.
Well, I'll order lamb. I love lamb.
Lamb is delicious. All right. I got some texts here. If Jack Nixon has investigative journalist skills and courage, he could get a Pulitzer for connecting and exposing the Islamo demo dots, even a best-selling book, The Greatest Disclosure in U.S. History. One does not have to fail to achieve. That's rationalism. No, I do think you have to fail to achieve. I really think that's true. Best quotes I ever heard from Tucker's guest, Joe Genova, federal prosecutor, former federal prosecutor. The Democrats have no principles, and if it wasn't for double standards, the Democrats would have no standards. Saw the bull in front of Sam Cain's place, but it reminds me of Merrill Lynch. And a clairvoyant named Horatio Villegas says World War III begins on May 13th. Don't know what that means. I wouldn't want the people Bob was talking about voting anyway. If they can't make it to the polling station, they're not up on the issues. And did you hear the CEO of La Clinica resigned, Suzanne's Gutierrez Martinez? Something's stirring and nobody's talking. They say it's personal. Okay, so anyway, got to go right this second, but thanks for tuning in. We'll talk to Arif next week. Go to Thai India. Have a great day. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450. Thanks, Arif. Hey, it's Kelly.
Hi, my name is Lene Bassett, calling from Nelson Radio Ratings. Have I reached a household or a place of business?
You've reached a radio show studio.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right, and let me go ahead and verify your number so I can take you out of our calling list.